The Anti-Federalists, Selected Writings and Speeches. Excerpted from the book, edited by Bruce Fronin, read by Eric the Blacksmith. Preface note to Letter 5. Cato criticizes the Constitution for failing to separate fully the new government's legislative, executive, and judicial functions. This failure leaves American liberty at the mercy of the rulers. The danger will be increased by a federal legislature that is too small to represent the interests of all the people. Essays in the Federalist of Particular Relevance, 47 through 51, 56, 57, and 58. New York Journal, 22nd November, 1787, Letter 5. To the citizens of the State of New York. In my last number, I endeavored to prove that the language of the article relative to the establishment of the executive of this new government was vague and inexplicit, that the great powers of the president, connected with his duration in office, would lead to oppression and ruin, that he would be governed by favorites and flatterers, or that a dangerous council would be collected from the great officers of state, that the 10 miles square, if the remarks of one of the wisest men, drawn from the experience of mankind, may be credited, would be the asylum of the base, idle, avaricious, and ambitious, and that the court would possess a language and manners different from yours, that a vice president is as unnecessary as he is dangerous in his influence, that the president cannot represent you because he is not of your own immediate choice, that if you adopt this government, you will incline to an arbitrary and odious aristocracy or monarchy, that the president, possessed of the power given him by this frame of government, differs but very immaterially from the establishment of monarchy in Great Britain, and I warned you to beware of the fallacious resemblance that is held out to you by the advocates of this new system between it and your own state governments. And here I cannot help remarking that inexplicitness seems to pervade this whole political fabric. Certainty in political compacts, which Mr. Coke calls the mother and nurse of repose and quietness, the want of which induced men to engage in political society, has ever been held by a wise and free people as essential to their security, as on the one hand it fixes barriers which the ambitious and tyrannically disposed magistrate dare not overleap, and on the other becomes a wall of safety to the community. Otherwise, stipulations between the governors and governed are nugatory, and you might as well deposit the important powers of legislation and execution in one or a few and permit them to govern according to their disposition and will. But the world is too full of examples which prove that to live by one man's will became the cause of all men's misery. Before the existence of express political compacts, it was reasonably implied that the magistrate should govern with wisdom and justice. But mere implication was too feeble to restrain the unbridled ambition of a bad man, or afford security against negligence, cruelty, or any other defect of mind. It is alleged that the opinions and manners of the people of America are capable to resist and prevent an extension of prerogative or oppression. But you must recollect that opinion and manners are mutable, and may not always be a permanent obstruction against the encroachment of government. That the progress of a commercial society begets luxury, the parent of inequality, the foe to virtue, and the enemy to restraint, and that ambition and voluptuousness, aided by flattery, will teach magistrates, where limits are not explicitly fixed, to have separate and distinct interests from the people. Besides, it will not be denied that government assimilates the manners and opinions of the community to it. Therefore, a general presumption that rulers will govern well is not a sufficient security. You are then under a sacred obligation to provide for the safety of your posterity. And would you now basely desert their interests, when by a small share of prudence you may transmit to them a beautiful political patrimony, which will prevent the necessity of their traveling through seas of blood to obtain that which your wisdom might have secured? It is a duty you owe likewise to your own reputation, for you have a great name to lose. You are characterized as cautious, prudent, and jealous in politics, whence Is it therefore that you are about to precipitate yourselves into a sea of uncertainty and adopt a system so vague and which has discarded so many of your valuable rights? Is it because you do not believe that an American can be a tyrant? If this be the case, you rest on a weak basis. Americans are like other men in similar situations. When the manners and opinions of the community are changed by the causes I mentioned before, and your political compact inexplicit, your posterity will find that great power connected with ambition, luxury, and flattery will as readily produce a Caesar, Caligula, Nero, and Domitian in America as the same causes did in the Roman Empire. But the next thing to be considered in conformity to my plan is the first article of this new government, which comprises the erection of the House of Representatives and Senate, and prescribes their various powers and objects of legislation. The most general objections to the first article are that biennial elections for representatives are a departure from the safe democratical principles of annual ones, that the number of representatives are too few, that the apportionment and principles of increase are unjust, that no attention has been paid to either the numbers or property in each state in forming the Senate, that the mode in which they are appointed and their duration will lead to the establishment of an aristocracy, that the Senate and President are improperly connected, both as to appointments and the making of treaties which are to become the supreme law of the land, that the judicial in some measure, to wit, as to the trial of impeachments, is placed in the Senate a branch of the legislative, and sometimes a branch of the executive, that Congress have the improper power of making or altering the regulations prescribed by the different legislatures respecting the time, place, and manner of holding elections for representatives, and the time and manner of choosing senators, that standing armies may be established, an appropriation of money made for their support for 2 years, that the militia of the most remote state may be marched into those states situated at the opposite extreme of this continent, that the slave trade is to all intents and purposes permanently established, and a slavish capitation or poll tax may at any time be levied. These are some of the many evils that will attend the adoption of this government. But with respect to the first objection, it may be remarked that a well-digested democracy has this advantage over all others, to wit, that it affords to many the opportunity to be advanced to the supreme command, and the honors they thereby enjoy fills them with a desire of rendering themselves worthy of them. Hence this desire becomes part of their education, is matured in manhood, and produces an ardent affection for their country. And it is the opinion of the great Sidney and Montesquieu that this is in a great measure produced by annual election of magistrates. If annual elections were to exist in this government, and learning and information to become more prevalent, you never will want men to execute whatever you could design. Sidney observes, quote, that a well-governed state is as fruitful to all good purposes as the seven-headed serpent is said to have been in evil. When one head is cut off, many rise up in the place of it, unquote. He remarks further that, quote, it was also thought that free cities, by frequent elections of magistrates, became nurseries of great and able men, every man endeavoring to excel others, that he might be advanced to the honor he had no other title to than what might arise from his merit or reputation. But the framers of this perfect government, as it is called, have departed from this democratical principle and established biennial elections for the House of Representatives, who are to be chosen by the people, and sextennial for the Senate, who are to be chosen by the legislatures of the different states, and have given to the executive the unprecedented power of making temporary senators in case of vacancies, by resignation or otherwise, and so far forth establishing a precedent for virtual representation, though in fact their original appointment is virtual, thereby influencing the choice of the legislatures, or if they should not be so complacent as to conform to his appointment. Offense will be given to the executive and the temporary members, will appear ridiculous by rejection. This temporary member, during his time of appointment, will of course act by a power derived from the executive and for and under his immediate influence. It is a very important objection to this government that the representation consists of so few, too few to resist the influence of corruption and the temptation to treachery, against which all governments ought to take precautions. How guarded you have been on this head in your own state constitution. And yet the number of senators and representatives proposed for this vast continent does not equal those of your own state. How great the disparity if you compare them with the aggregate numbers in the United States. The history of representation in England, from which we have taken our model of legislation, is briefly this. Before the institution of legislating by deputies, the whole free part of the community usually met for that purpose. When this became impossible, by the increase of numbers, the community was divided into districts, from each of which was sent such a number of deputies as was a complete representation of the various numbers and order of citizens within them. But can it be asserted with truth that six men can be a complete and full representation of the numbers and various orders of the people of this state? Another thing may be suggested against the small number of representatives is that but few of you will have the chance of sharing even in this branch of the legislature, and that the choice will be confined to a very few. The more complete it is, the better will your interests be preserved, and the greater the opportunity you will have to participate in government. One of the principal securities of a free people. But this subject has been so ably and fully treated by a writer under the signature of Brutus that I shall content myself with referring you to him thereon, reserving further observations on the other objections I have mentioned for my future numbers. Signed, Cato.